All right, we are back in session. It is now 10:16, according to the large novelty clock in the back of the room. Commissioner Udaly.
Colleagues, I'm pleased to introduce this next item. Today, we will be voting to authorize a $600,000 grant agreement with United Way to support the 2020 census preparation efforts. Before we begin, I'd like to thank my colleagues for their support of the census budget requests. This work is vitally important, and I'm proud of the City of Portland's contribution to the effort. I'll have more to say about that after the presentation. Joining us today to share more about how Portland fits into the We Count Oregon campaign are Director Sook Ree, who I actually just saw walk into my office, not Council Chambers. Here she is. From the Office of Community and Civic Life, Amanda Whalen from United Way, and Esperanza Turbulon Garrett of Dancing Hearts Consulting. Please come forward to the table.
Good morning.
Good morning, our elected officials, our colleagues, and our community members, including Spirit of Portland honoree last night, Angela Harris. My name is Sook Ree, and I serve as director for the Office of Community Civic Life. This presentation is to provide you the context and the update that you need to authorize a transfer of $600,000 to the United Way as our fiscal sponsor for the Census 2020 work. I'm just going to give you a quick update. There is a slide deck that they are arranging to load with the council clerk, but my remarks do not need a PowerPoint presentation. So last year, council allowed for three investments in the 2020 census. The first was a $225,000 award in the fall 18-19 fall bump, and then council allowed Civic Life to redirect $125,000 in general fund resources in the spring bump, and then in the fiscal 19-20 budget, council committed an additional $250,000 for a total investment of $600,000. And the first $20,000 of city funds were pledged to hire a statewide census equity coordinator with the Census Equity Funders Committee of Oregon, sometimes we refer to them as CEFCO, and the CEFCO is comprised of the region's philanthropic private funders. So CEFCO then chose a community-led proposal to work with Dancing Hearts Consulting in January, who then worked with multiple entities to develop a campaign plan from February to June. At the same time, in that same period, CEFCO and Dancing Hearts used this plan to secure an additional $7.5 million from the state of Oregon, now toward a total $10 million investment in Heart to Count in a Heart to Count campaign statewide. I'm going to pause for a moment there because this is actually the first time this has actually happened in our state's history. And Council's first investment through the fall bump last year was the critical step that enabled all of us to leverage early and limited dollars toward a $10 million outcome. And so thank you for that. Today, we request your support for transferring the city's $600,000 to the fiscal agent for CEFCO. And Amanda Whalen from the United Way of the Columbia Willamette will share information about the Census Equity Fund and the CEFCO partnership. And then Esperanza Tervalon Garrett of Dancing Hearts Consulting will talk about the We Count campaign implementation plan. So if we are ready to load, thank you for your help. And
thank you so much.
Wonderful. So Amanda will.
So thank you very much for having us here this morning. I'm Amanda Whalen, Chief Impact Officer at United Way, and I'm here representing CEFCO and the Census Equity Fund. So the Census Equity Funders Committee of Oregon is a collaborative of philanthropic organizations that have been working together for almost 2 years now to address the hard-to-count issue here in Portland, in Oregon. And we are looking at a $10 million overall statewide campaign that's part of a larger $14 million campaign that's trying to make sure that all of the Oregonians are counted in the census.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. So the Census Equity Fund, what you have in front of you in this slide is our operating sort of thoughts on how we move forward. A couple of things I want to point out. What we've done is we've created an aligned pooled fund, which is able to remove barriers for community-based organizations and have one place where they're applying for funding in order to do field and community-based work to ensure that our hardest-to-count populations are reached. Second, as far as we know, this is the only private and public pooled fund in the country. So a number of states are running private funds and public funds in order to reach hard to count. But as far as we know, this is the only place where we are doing that sort of aligned work where CBOs can apply to one single place. Finally, a part of our work is also going to be the evaluation and the gear up for 2030. So one of the things that we found was that a number of states, Minnesota in particular, had started much earlier than we had. 2 years ago seems like a long time in preparation for this, but what we now know is by gathering this aligned group and doing this work, we're able to get ready again and be more prepared for 2030, which is an exciting thought.
Let's hope we'll have federal help in 2030, huh?
Agreed. So in November of 2018, we put out an RFP for a statewide equity coordinator, and we're lucky enough to have a group of organizations from around the state who applied to run the campaign. They nominated Dancing Hearts Consulting to be the lead applicant for that coalition, and in May, they developed a hard-to-count campaign that I believe has been shared with you already. So I just wanted to update you on where we are around these funds raised for the campaign. So as Sukhit said, we are looking at a $10 million hard-to-count campaign fund. CEFCO had an early $1 million pledge, and as you can see, we are almost to that $1 million pledge, and that's from private philanthropy. We have another $8.1 million that is so far committed from public funds, and so our total pledge is almost $9 million. Total committed is almost $9 million, and then it's almost $9.4 in terms of pledged. So we're anticipating we have approximately about $600,000 more to raise in order to reach our hard-to-count campaign goal.
So have no other local jurisdictions, cities or counties contributed apart from the City of Portland?
Not have contributed to the fund directly. We have other jurisdictions that have set aside dollars but have yet to contribute directly to the fund.
Can I mention that in the 1920 budget, the Multnomah County matched the city's commitment of $250,000 as well?
So that's included in the pledges on this?
Is it included in the pledges? Yes.
Thank you.
So United Way, as Sook mentioned, is we are providing backbone support to CEFCO and to the Census Equity Fund. Currently, what we're doing is continuing to provide that support to Dancing Hearts Consulting. We're funding and contracting with those 13 partner organizations that are leading the field campaign. We're also supporting Portland State University, the Population Research Center, and they're doing a ton of data work that's preparing for the campaign. And we're also preparing for the Census Assistance Center at RFP. So those will be Census Assistance Center in all 36 counties of the state that will be providing support to communities. And now I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks. Hello, my name is Esperanza Tervuan Garrett, and I am the CEO of Dancing Hearts Consulting. I am the first woman of color and black woman in the country to run a C3, C4 PAC focused on turning out voters of color. And I live in Ashland. I'm a mother, a wife, and a horsewoman, and it's a real honor to be here. So thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you. I want to talk a little bit about the We Count Oregon mission and campaign. We're a really different kind of campaign for a different era. This campaign is being run by black, indigenous, and women of color. We are a campaign that is putting race and culture first. It's centered in the campaign. It is not secondary or ancillary. We believe that using trusted messengers with tailored messages are how we're going to move about 1 million hard-to-count communities to understand, be educated around, and compelled to take the census. So I think you all know this, but just a quick refresher. A hard-to-count community is a community that has a less than 76% self-response rate in the first few weeks of the census. Generally speaking, those are people of color, renters, immigrants, children under 5, and people with limited English proficiency. I should just tell you, in Oregon, for example, some of those communities, you know, 38% of Oregonians are renters, for example. 6%, we think, of children, 6% of Oregon's population are children under five. We think about 25% of the state population are people of color. So we know that they're pretty large demographics.
Commissioner Hartstein.
I just have a quick question. I'm fascinated by children under five being hard to count. Mm-hmm. Why would they be hard to count?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking. So for a couple of reasons. Often newborn babies are sometimes not thought of as yet part of the family, and so we see kids under one often being undercounted or just left off, just not sort of counted. The other piece is, that's been a big one that's come up for us is around co-parenting. So if a person is co-parenting with a partner, what we're telling folks is that if you have that child on April 1st, then you count them. And so sometimes in the shared family and rearing of children, children cannot be claimed because nobody knows who's supposed to claim them. Yeah.
Thank you.
And the impact of not counting children 0 to 5 means that those children up to the time they're 15 or 20 won't receive the resources we need to make sure they're educated and supported. So the impact is huge, and it's a long-lasting impact, a decade of impact. I want to talk a little bit about the partner organizations and how this came to be. We are so fortunate to partner with these 13 organizations, and recently I think people have been asking, well, how did you apply for this? And I said, well, I didn't apply for this. I got a call over the winter break from some really amazing organizers who said, listen, we absolutely believe that that we're already working in hard-to-count communities. We think that these communities should continue to be in communication with us about this really important democratic process. We are interested in trying some new things. We know we want to use field-focused strategies. I had worked with them, and you know, we said we'd like to try a new, like, hit at this. And so I said, well, okay, sure. They said, oh, don't worry, it'll be totally easy. And here we are, really excited to see you for the second time. It has not been easy, but I will say that when we look at this plan, I'm so fortunate to be able to be the person who represents us as the lead consultant, and I'm happy to carry some of this work alongside of them. And none of this is possible without their leadership, their contribution. Their fingerprints are all over this plan, and we created this together. Just want to acknowledge that. We do have partners. I just want to let you know that, as Amanda was saying, our campaign really is different, and it's being lifted up in a lot of different spaces for being so different. We are one of the few Black, Indigenous, women of color-led consultants on a campaign across the country. In fact, we don't know of any other that have an all-women shop or all-women of color shop. And we decided that we wanted to partner with the best of the best. So we work with PSU, the Population Research Center, and that team to make sure that all of our information is correct. So they do all of our fact-checking, and then we do deep dive, like data nerd stuff that you don't want to know about, to prepare us for when we actually do the count and how to report that. We work with SCAN, the State Count Action Network, which is made up of Asian American Pacific Islander Advancement Project the Leadership Council and State Voices. And we're basically a part of a national network that has done a ton of polling around what messages work, what's moving folks. And then the Funder Census Initiative is where we're learning from other consultants around the country about what they're working on, what other consultants are working on, and how they're moving census in their places. So our campaign goals are lofty, 200,000 hard-to-count contacts. A contact is not a knock. How many of you like no knocks? You use knock and yeah, we're not doing knocks. That's about how much energy you put out. We're curious about how many people you talk to. We're going to partner with 100 organizations. We're going to train 10,000 people, and we're going to have 50,000 people participate in a text-to-count program. Don't worry, I'm going to pitch it to you later since we're on television and I have slides. There are four main parts to the campaign infrastructure, which we've been building since July, and that's really about our data and sort of campaign space and all the trainings and technologies that we need to move this campaign. We're doing a ton of education and training. In fact, yesterday we had our first webinar for Census 101. We had 156 people register and 128 people show up. So the conversion rate, the actual percentage at which people are participating is extremely high. We're developing pretty strong communications. Our communications are persuasive. They are in multiple language, and they're targeted for constituencies. So the language for children under five, for example, will be different than the language for Black immigrants. And then we're focusing on field. I was asked to talk mostly about field, so that's what I'm going to pinpoint here. If you want to ask other things, happy to do that during question and answer. We're in a preparation period right now where we are all learning about the census, and we are you know, doing our work to put in place our field plans. January to April will be an education phase. Mostly you'll see trainings and opportunities for people to sort of learn about the census. We call April to August activation, and that's where we'll be running an 100-day campaign to reach 200,000 people. And then impact will be after we have agreed to do a ton of evaluation, because there's not a lot of information or knowledge known in this state about census. We want to make sure that we do a good job, like really being critical about what worked and what didn't.
Sorry.
What's an example of some of the egregious misinformation about the 2020 census?
Sure. So recently, actually, I think just last week, a mailer came out from the RNC asking people to donate, but it had the census information all over it. So it said Census 2020 is one example. And so we put out a mailer. It was Oregon is probably the 15th state to receive to be targeted for this. It's actually there's a federal law prohibiting anyone from sending mail through the U.S. Postal Service that says census, that is not census related. And so we put out a mailer to let people know that this was not, in fact, a census form, that they did not have to fill this out. It had a number that you were supposed to go and put into a website. And so that information is on our website. We sent out a mailer. So we got the information. We sent out an email within 24 hours to let people know this is not a real thing, and to try and make sure that we are giving people the right information so that they can make well-informed choices. And frankly, aren't fearful, right? Fear is a huge issue that we're combating with a lot of the communities that we're working with.
How did you determine that the RNC was behind that flyer?
Oh, it has their name on it.
And who are they coordinating with in the state of Oregon?
You know, it was unclear. The person who got it was a Democrat, and so we don't think that it was, it's not necessarily partisan, but it is, they've been flooding, and they started in New York. I would say we saw this and tracked it through our partners at SCAN. We tracked it last, I guess maybe in May, we saw the first one fall in New York. And so we knew it was coming, and we're prepared to respond.
So it's the Republican National Committee is sending out illegal mailings. Is the Oregon State Attorney General going to sue them?
You know, I don't know.
Has somebody complained?
I don't know what the plan is around pushing back against this. Again, it's a national push. I think that the envelope and the framing and the messaging on it talks about the census as an entry point, and then it becomes clear that it's actually a fundraising email.
So have your organization complained to the Attorney General?
We have not.
I would like you to do that, please.
Sure. I appreciate the recommendation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I want to talk a little bit about Portland, because I know that you all love Portland just like I do. So, you know, I had a request, so I just want to acknowledge that Silk made an amazing request for me to get some real deep dive data on Portland, who and where and what languages and how many and, you know, what would be the percentage. And I talked to Jason, we talked for about an hour, and I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but to tell you, it would take us about a year to put that kind of disaggregated data together for you. And the process through which we would do that would be to look at 2017 data. And we are actually 6 months away from just doing the census. Mm-hmm. So we want to ask that you all offer some grace to us in not being able to provide that level of data, which would both be out of date and is exactly what we're here to talk with you about today. We are sort of starting at a baseline. The data that we're using is a little old, and 2020 is the time for us to count new people. And we have some projection, we have some ideas about what the demographics will look like and where we should target, but we will, you know, we conduct this process every 10 years so that we can be sure. And that's where we are. Here's what I can tell you about our campaign in Portland. 10 of the 13 organizations will be focused here. Each organization will be hiring a paid team. We project that about 150 short-term temporary jobs will be, we will have that many jobs here in Portland, about 150. They pay $17 per hour, and folks will work for 100 days. We also know that we have targeted trainings for communities happening mostly in Portland, although in the metro area for, you know, the Tri-County for sure. And two of our staff are based here in Portland. Both our field director and our training, our community engagement staff person are here in Portland. And our final piece was that we will have an office here. So we're deeply committed to making sure that this city is counted. We think there's a lot here, a lot of communities, a lot of connections, and our trusted messengers with the right messages can move those folks.
Before you move off that map, as is often the case with city staff, my neighborhood's not on the map. It's
too far south, and that is a it's maybe the demographics of that census tract are not such that there are, it shows up as a hard to count, but there are a significant immigrant and refugee population. Mm-hmm. So it's West Portland Park, and it's the intersection of I-5 Barber and Capitol Highway. And if, as I say, you know, if we're looking at defined hard-to-count populations, it's going to be, in some cases, the populations which are concentrated but swamped by not hard-to-count populations.
I'm so glad that you raised that. This is not the map that we will use to go out and talk to folks in Portland. These are the hard-to-count tracts from 2010 that show the degree to which they were they required additional in-person engagement. We know that there are hard-to-track counts, so we will be in these areas, but we know that there are hard-to-count people all over. We're not going to get 1 million people out of these little neighborhoods. And frankly, if you pull back the map, we aren't going to get 1 million out of that either. So we are doing an overlay between geography and demographics to fuse together this statewide campaign. We think that our target universe, the total number of people that we'll reach out to, is right around 860,000 people through phones, doors, and cell phone information.
Are you looking at schools, particularly elementary schools, and the demographics served by those schools?
So traditionally and historically, yes and no. Traditionally and historically, the Oregon complete count, whatever the complete count is for a state, is responsible for working with government entities and all of the agencies funded by the state. So schools, a lot, libraries, all of these things would fall under the complete count. They're still developing their plan, and we're really excited to partner with them when we have more clarity. We are putting together and working with organizations that work with children and families would be more our shtick. But we are happy to fill whatever gaps need to be filled so that children are counted.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you so much for the information. Who is going to be counting people who are houseless in our community? Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for asking. So actually, you know, there are some communities that that we do not provide forms for, and houseless folks would be in that demographic. Indigenous people, Native people, tribal people will also be enumerated in person. And so the U.S. Census Bureau will send someone out to places where they understand houseless people to be, and they will count them in person there.
Let me just say that they're not going to have a lot of success, because people who are houseless don't talk to people who say, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. It would really be important to partner with organizations who already have a relationship with folks who are houseless. So, and quite frankly, you will find in the population of people who are houseless the hard-to-count population that we say that we're targeting. So I would hope that you would add one or two organizations that actually have a relationship with folks who are houseless as part of the team. And then, you know, whatever the federal government does, when and if they show up, hopefully adds value.
Thank you.
And sorry, and as we mentioned a little bit earlier, there is an opportunity for those organizations to apply to be a census assistance center as well. So, I mean, one thing is that as people are coming to get services, setting up those computers in the lobbies in order to help people complete forms if possible, if they're coming in, which I know is a whole other issue as well. So it's also going out to where people are.
I was going to say, ma'am, yeah, they're not going to come to you, right? Which is why it's really important to, and when you say have them apply, I mean, I think it's the responsibility of the Complete Count Committee to actually identify those organizations, work with them to develop an application, and then help them do the hardest job that there is in census, which is counting folks who don't have a house, right? So I think that we have to do something different mm-hmm. if we're really intent mm-hmm. on counting folks who today don't have a roof over their head.
That's right.
Commissioner Daley.
Esperanza, could you yes. explain what you meant by not having forms for a houseless population?
Sure. So the process for the census is that people will get a mailing from the federal government. It will have your web address because we are taking an online census form this year, or 2020, and he'll have a URL basically that you go to, and you'll get six mailings with an opportunity to respond to that before an enumerator comes to your home, in the case where people do not have homes, the federal government has decided to enumerate them, which it was the process until about the 60s when you have the first mail-in census. And that process is where people would it's problematic. It's a process through which the federal government sends a paid staff person called an enumerator to come and count you. And so they might say there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people here. And they'll say they're at this intersection, under this bridge, in this park, et cetera. They will write that on the form, and that will count for those people.
So this isn't a case of us not treating people equally or wanting to count this population, but the process is somewhat prescribed by the federal government.
It is, a little bit and unjust and not equal and unfair.
Okay.
But it is the process that the federal government has set forth to date.
But that doesn't preclude us from doing outreach to that population, correct?
You're right. And we, for example, are partnering with the Oregon Food Bank and other sort of service agencies and adjunct. I don't think that gets to Commissioner Hardesty's question, which I think is a good one, and I'm happy to revisit.
Okay. I'm also really interested in this
yeah.
subject, but I understand that list that we saw of hard-to-count populations doesn't include every hard-to-count population. It's the most significant populations that we're targeting to try to get to the most complete count possible.
Right. Houseless people are not included in the hard to count traditional bucket at all because they would not have homes. It's based on the 76% response rate.
And again, that's not our definition.
It is not.
That is the federal government.
That's correct.
Okay.
Commissioner Hardesty, then Commissioner Fish.
Before you're finished with your excellent presentation, can someone, for the benefit of the public,
yes.
just take a moment to explain why this is important?
Sure.
Because I think sometimes people don't connect the dots. I mean, we know, for example, that if we get a good count this time, we may get an extra congressional seat. So that adds to clout in Washington, D.C. We know that there are a lot of programs the federal government funds based on a formula. So your population determines how much you get of an entitlement or whatever. But I think it's helpful to use this forum just to remind people of what's really at stake here. What is the big win for our community if we get an honest count?
May I? You did a great job, by the way. So thank you so much.
I just did the ones I knew off the top of my head.
Those are all the ones. You did all the things. One example, I think one important thing to remember is that for each person that we count, the state of Oregon will receive $3,200 in federal funding for each person. In 2016, federal funding made up $13 billion of Oregon's state general fund. That is a huge amount. And so we know that these federal dollars are coming in because people in Oregon rely on federal services. Like Medicaid and SNAP, public transportation dollars. There's a direct connection between participating in the census and literally the tax dollars, the money that gets to be in our own pockets. So leaving anyone out has a fiscal impact on all of our lives. I think the other piece is around apportionment. We expect to count about 450,000 new Oregonians in this state. And it is not only a clout in D.C., it's actually a constitutional right to have representation. When we have more population, we are deserving of a seat in Congress to make sure that everyone's needs are reflected in the debates that happen and shape all of our lives.
I know that in my homes, my birth state of New York, they're bracing for the loss of some congressional districts. So we have a chance to pick up another congressional seat, which would be huge for Oregon. I think that $3,200 per person number is easy to understand and really, really compelling. We should probably allocate some additional money so that we'll offer people up to $3,100 to do the census, because we'll still get $100 out of it. But that's a very compelling, compelling number. And I think that's easy for people to understand, and that those dollars then flow to programs they care about. So I thank you for reducing it to something that's bite-sized, and I think that's part of the messaging we should help you with.
Before I get to Commissioner Hardesty, can I get a time check? How far through your presentation are you?
I can be done.
Very good, Commissioner.
I want to make sure that I talk about census assistance centers.
Yeah, good.
If you have questions, it's a great conversation.
Please, go ahead. I don't want to cut it off.
I'm here to do whatever is helpful.
You bet. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. So it occurred to me, is the census based on your physical street address?
So there are 50 questions that have been standard on the census since it was initiated in 1790. And the questions include your name, your address, a phone number, your relationship to the head of household, and your social security number. We know that in this climate of fear, these questions feel scary. Whether you're a citizen or non-citizen, I feel afraid about what is possible by providing this information. I do want to offer that Title 13 does protect us under federal code, that information shall not be used in court cases by the government or for any purpose that individuates you. So it should not be able to see your individual information. And anyone who violates that law is subject to 5 years in prison, a $250,000 fine, or both.
So I asked that question because to register someone to vote, they don't actually have to have a physical street address. You can register someone to vote who's in a county jail. You can register people to vote using community services as their address for them to pick up their ballot. And so what I'm trying to understand is what case would you make to someone who is houseless? Why is it important for them to fill out the census material?
Again, they won't fill out the census material, but they will be counted by someone who's identifying them and doing a number count and identifying them to a location, maybe under a bridge or in a park.
Are they also doing demographic information? So are they looking at you and me and saying, oh, they're both African Americans who live under this bridge? Or
I do not know that information, but I'm happy to talk to the census folks and know more.
I would love to know more about
that.
Yes. I'm sorry. My original question was, so what happens with no address?
So they are marked as living under the bridge, some number of people. That becomes the physical location, whatever the coordinates are for that location. It could be a park, it could be whatever, and that is what gets submitted. There are kind of two ways that this is happening. One is called self-response, and that's the form that you're going to get where you tell them, hey, this is my information, this is who I am. And then there's enumeration where they come, and it is true that in the past, the history was very racist and terrible, where someone would show up and say that you were, for a while, black, white, or mulatto, and those were the options. That leaves some questions about how we will get race data and other important demographic about gender gender and sex from that form, but I don't know how. I don't actually know their process. And again, our campaign is really about the community-led effort to connect trusted messengers with communities that they're working in. But these are important questions that I think need to be answered.
Thank you,
Commissioner Fritz.
If someone's mailing address is a post office box or Sisters of the Road, do they get the form delivered there?
Where's your form delivered? That's a really good question. It is supposed to go to your home address. It's a little bit problematic, for example, for renters, right, who might get a piece of mail coming and it'll say the name of the homeowner instead of the folks who live there. It is supposed to go to your home to the mailbox address, not the P.O. box.
Okay. And then I think I heard this at a similar presentation at Metro Policy Advisory Committee, that you don't have to fill out every question.
That is true.
So are there any mandatory questions?
It's a good question. We have been trying to get a clear answer from that right now. I think it's unclear still. I will say this about the census. I have been working on the census now. This is my second round, so I'm at least 10 years in. And after 10 years and 20 years in my field, I definitely am an expert, but I am no authority. And the current government is making it very challenging to get clear answers And so I can tell you what I know, but not what I don't.
But the goal of the census is to get a count of the people, regardless of whether they're documented or undocumented.
That's correct.
Yes. So you wouldn't have to put a social security number, for example, if you didn't have one.
You would think.
Okay, got that. Thank you.
Can I just make a comment about that? The discipline that Esperanza has just showed about what we can and what we should and should not say, and also what we're legally held to, is part of the ambassador's training. Everyone, volunteers, community leaders alike, that are talking about the census in the Hard to Count campaign will go through census education and training, because it is not good to have inconsistent responses to very difficult questions, and we want to make sure our campaign is completely legal and completely consistent, because that helps create a somewhat lessened state of fear in response.
Very good.
And we're going to ask for that discipline from all our community partners.
Very good. Any Commissioner Udaly?
I just wanted to thank all of my colleagues for these questions. Who would have thunk something as boring sounding as the census, which is just data collection.
That's right.
It's vital statistics. But it is so profoundly important, and we, you know, this particular census is so fraught. I'm very interested in this issue around the homeless count, because we struggle as a city to get an accurate count of our own homeless population. I think we can help, and I'm wondering if there's any way to connect with or collaborate with the federal government, the enumerators. And Commissioner Fish's questions about what this means, I think, is so important to convey, because there are people who, whether they distrust the government, whether they face barriers to participating, whether they're just really busy, and this is one more task and burden for them to deal with in the course of their day. That's a lot to overcome. And I know from personal experience, when you feel like the system is not serving you and you will not get your needs met by this person who's coming and asking to take your time and energy, a lot of people are not likely to want to give that time. And, you know, Oregon has a booming economy, yet we are almost dead last in mental health services, in addiction services. We have high food insecurity. We have low high school graduation. We have a statewide housing crisis. And it's just vitally important that we count every single person that we can to increase that funding and hopefully alleviate some of these issues. So thank you.
Very good. Commissioner Fritz, and then we'll get to public testimony.
Director, I was just wondering, are you engaging the neighborhood associations and the district coalitions in encouraging them to sign up
yes,
to be ambassadors?
Yes, we're engaging everyone. We need everyone's help on this.
Yeah, so it seems like you could combine some of the comments we had earlier. You know, neighborhood volunteers would not only get paid $17 an hour, but also be knocking on doors and saying, by the way, come to the meeting
yes.
next week or whatever.
If that's allowed.
May I say one last thing? We will ask you for not just your vote today, but on November 12th, the Population Research Center and CEFCO are holding a census symposium at PSU, and one of the target audiences are elected officials, so we would like for you to join us there and also get your other colleagues there to have this important conversation in the state.
Do you know what time that is, Sue?
I think it's an all-day event, 8 to 4 p.m., and the most important time for you to join is in the morning.
Do you want to say anything else about that?
That was perfect.
Okay, very good. Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you.
Appreciate
so
it. Very helpful. Carla, please call the first three. 3 minutes each name for the record.
I show only two people signed up, Lightning and Maggie.
Very good. Come on up. Good morning. Maggie, would you like to start, please?
You know, someone a long time ago said to me, do something right or don't do it at all. And these women, collectively in conjunction with these agencies, are putting out a tremendous amount of effort. And I totally get the whole idea is to get those federal dollars, but for me, it's about what you're going to do with the federal dollars once you get them. And I see indigenous peoples in shelters and on the street. I see people of color in the shelters and on the street. I see immigrants in the shelters and on the street. I see aging people who have lived here all their lives and are disabled, and they are on the street. Why are they not in housing if they have lived here all their lives? I see Cascadia, who apparently will admit to the fact that they use 65% of their budget to administrative costs. And then on top of that, then they use the shelters to shelter lifelong disabled people and aging people in with people who have addiction issues of meth and heroin and incarceration, have had incarceration and violent issues. Why are they in the shelter together? I want to know, United Way, they're doing a horrible job with 211. Everyone who's houseless hates 211. It doesn't do, it's completely useless. It's an abysmal service. It doesn't hook them up with housing or social services. And I'm talking about people who have been kicked out of shelter and have died, or have been kicked out and they ended up getting pneumonia from exposure. They were in a wheelchair. Or they were kicked out because they went to county council to talk about unfair treatment, because the staff that they hire for these places are untrained.
Maggie?
Yeah.
Good morning. How are you?
I know. We're talking about the census.
Yes.
And we're talking about what money you can get.
As you know, right, we are taking testimony on whether or not we should be investing in hard-to-count people. I know where your passion is. However, what is on the table at the moment is the census. Do you think that this is a good investment or not?
In 20 seconds,
We could get away from some of these bad acting contractors that the government looks away from, and it's worth.
We are not talking about contractors today. We are talking about counting people so that we can get the resources.
I would say hire houseless people to count the houseless.
I think that's a great idea. Boom. Thank you, Maggie.
Okay.
You've talked to the topic. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Super Data. One of the biggest concerns I have on the census is Commissioner Hardesty, and I believe Commissioner Fish brought up some really good points. It said on that list of five, you would have thought the hard to count would have definitely been the homeless community without any doubt. We're in a state of emergency. And the main thing from the city, the county, the state is to focus on the homelessness and the homeless themselves, on making sure they step up and they do the census survey. Now, it was quoted that there was 3,200 per person. I've heard another number of 1,200 per person. And we need to really narrow these numbers down to get a clear understanding what the real number is. And you know, on the federal assistance distributed using the Census Bureau data, to me, that's the most important issue here. When you're looking at the Section 8, when you're looking at housing for seniors, when you're looking at housing all across the board, if you don't get the numbers in, we lose that money. And then we have to go back to the general fund at the city and start pulling money and then start worrying about providing services. This, to me, is about the most important issue we've had in the city that I've ever seen. Because that number has to be met. We need to get the people that are not being counted to understand. And I'm proposing that what we do for the homeless community is that if we can do this by law, and that'll need to be checked, we offer to pay them $20. You step forward and you do this, you receive $20 for participating. Now look at what Commissioner Fish stated. We need to check on that if there's... Okay.
It's illegal to pay people to fill out a census document.
Okay, that's something to check, and I'll check on that too with attorneys. Now, My point is, what is the incentive for them to step forward and do this? You can say, we're going to lose 3,200, and they're going to say, well, I'm not going to appear. And that's a big deal here on how we could do that. Could we even work something out on that? Because, I mean, let's face it, the state put up, what, $7 million toward this. And there's other money being put up on the table, too. And we need to look at something to really incentivize that hard-to-count population. I mean, we're in the digital community, the digital time, the technology is very advanced on using different software, Roam, Tiger, and different things on this issue. But the reality is we need to get people to be incentivized to do this. If we don't, the city loses big, big money on this. Huge money in the billions of dollars. When you start calculating and you look down at the numbers that are distributed, if we don't take this serious, probably the most serious thing we should, the amount of money we can lose to this city is tremendous.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you for your testimony. Any further business, Commissioner Daly?
Mayor, before we move on to the vote, I do have a couple clarifying questions. I'm not sure which one of our panel could answer it.
Thanks, Lightning. Appreciate it.
I just wanted to add one more thing to Commissioner Fish, not to cut anyone off. If you could check on that monetary incentive to see what the legalities are on that. I'd like to finish my conversation and then
thank you.
Thank
you
very much
for your
time. Thank you for your time, Commissioner Daly.
Maybe we could just have the panel come back quickly.
Yeah.
Commissioner Daly.
So you've heard a strong interest from the council and from public testimony in this issue around counting our homeless population. And as you explained, it's somewhat prescribed by the federal government. But I'm very interested in any way we can support or facilitate that process. So let's follow up on that. It's rare that Mr. Lightning and I agree on anything. And so when we do, I have a sense that it's vitally important.
The U.S. Census Federal, the Federal Bureau is actually hiring for enumerators. So I'm happy to connect you with Sarah, who is the lead person in the Bureau here in our region, to talk about what that might look like and how to distribute those job applications or processes.
Great.
So folks can apply.
That sounds like a great opportunity. Do any of you know what the estimated undercount was for the state of Oregon in the last census?
So we are not doing that. What I can tell you is what an undercount of 1% would have cost Oregon.
Okay.
It would have cost approximately $44.8 million starting in fiscal year 2015 and every year thereafter. So it's extensive. And I wanted to speak to the gentleman's question. You're right, the numbers did change. In 2020, the federal amount for each person counted was right around $1,200. It was around there, and we are projecting for 2020 that the new number will be 3,200. So thank you for giving me an opportunity to clarify that.
That was my second question, but you said 2020. So in 2010, it was 1,200.
Correct.
And now it's being estimated at 32.
That's correct.
Okay. Any final?
And just for clarity, I mean, one thing about the 2010 census is that was the most well-funded census in history. And there was still an undercount. So, I mean, we can anticipate that this with the very underfunded census, our challenges are.
And just to make sure the subtlety of your answer wasn't missed, you cannot tell me what the estimated undercount
I don't know the estimated undercount. There are many reports with differing numbers. What we feel is the most important thing for everyone to walk away with is that the census has already been clouded and in a shroud of controversy and miscommunication. There's huge misinformation coming in, and we only want to put out information that we feel 100% certain about. There's no reason to muddy the waters, and so where we are unclear or there isn't alignment in the sector, we would ask that we just not, unless it's critical. But I think these questions about the past are sort of in the past right now as we look to 2020. Yeah.
Because Rebecca, we missed the last slide. I'm looking at it. You can text Oregon to, what's the number?
Put it up.
I would appreciate it.
Yeah.
So we would love to get everyone to participate in our campaign. If you have a cell phone and you want to pull it out, you can text the word Oregon to 33339. You'll follow it to our WeCountOregon.com page. Go ahead and sign up for the link. It'll give you an opportunity to pledge to take the census. We will not overtext you. You can hit stop to stop receiving any time, but it will give you opportunities to get updates on the census, participate in events, and
let you know when the webinars are too.
Let you know when the webinars are.
Great.
Done.
Thank you. Thank you, Francis. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Carla. Please call the roll.
E. Bailey.
Well, I don't know if I feel better or worse about the fact that the federal government is possibly even worse at counting renters or engaging renters than the city of Portland, but I'm not going to forget that little detail. thank you to Sook, Amanda, and Esperanza for that fantastic presentation. The census is an exciting opportunity because it's about affirming that our democracy gives every single person the right to be counted. Similar to the right to vote, the right to be counted is a basic right, and it is absolutely fundamental to our democracy, and it's vitally important to our state, both in federal funding and in political representation. We're fairly certain that the 2020 census will bring us an additional seat in Congress. But that depends on our ability to make sure that all community members know and believe this. This is why our limited financial resources must go towards reaching hard-to-count communities. All of us in this room, I think, understand the very real barriers to participation and the blatant attempts by the Trump administration to instill fear and confusion around the census, and it is absolutely reprehensible. This is why the coordinated campaign across multiple sectors is so critically important. Before I close, I want to highlight Director Rhee's observation about the impact of Portland's early commitment. As elected city officials, we have an obligation to exercise fiscal responsibility over our limited funds. And yet we know that many of our most pressing issues are not neatly confined to the borders of our jurisdictions. Our communities expect that we will work together across jurisdictions, and this effort proves that leadership and sharing responsibility leads to better outcomes. So thank you, Sook. In closing, I'd like to thank all of our presenters today. Lauren and Esperanza, thank you for taking on such an important role in this work. It's a huge undertaking, but I have the utmost confidence in you and your teams to get this right. I also want to thank the Civic Life team, Shook, Marco, Perla, and Diane, for getting us to this point and continuing to lead the work to coordinate through our bureau. And finally, I feel like I should also thank Commissioner Stedman from Multnomah County, who was our county partner in the complete count. And finally, thank you, Sook, for your early identification of the census as a top priority. I honestly don't know if I would have identified it without your guidance, or at least identified it as early and as urgently important as you did. I want to acknowledge that $125,000 of these funds actually came from Sook scraping together savings from Civic Life's already tight budget when we couldn't get the full funding in the budget. And that type of commitment and your leadership in coordinating the city's efforts is to be commended. I am very pleased to vote aye.
Fritz.
Fascinating and important discussion. Thank you for coming from Ashland, and thank you for your leadership statewide. It's really great that we've got this public-private partnership. Aye.
Fish.
Well, this presentation brought back a flood of memories because in 2010, then Commissioner Deborah Cafori and I co-chaired the complete count. And it does seem like we've really advanced the conversation, and we have a much more sophisticated and comprehensive approach to getting a good count. I think the concern that we've all identified today is there's a lot of headwinds. It isn't just the misinformation coming out of Washington. It isn't just the climate of fear. I mean, we're asking people to fill out a form, and in some cases, these are people that still choose not to vote. These are people that do not necessarily participate in civic activities. And civic literacy generally in our community is at an all-time low. Some of these statewide surveys that we've had recently had as many as one half of Oregonians surprised to learn we have two United States senators. I think if we present this exercise as an abstract good government exercise, we're going to lose, which is why I was very pleased to hear the tangible benefits to our community. I think for some people, they can understand that another congressional district means clout in Washington. Other people will understand that $3,200 means a hungry child will get a meal in school or whatever. But I think our goal should be to come up with talking points that really put the human face on what the benefit is. Because if we present this as an exercise in good government or as an obligation or whatever, we're going to lose people. And the headwinds are pretty stiff. So I'm comforted by the presentation because I think we have an excellent team. And I think the plan makes a lot of sense. That obviously the time constraints are rough, and the fact that you're having difficulty getting clear answers from Washington is obviously disconcerting, but not surprising. But I want to thank our presenters for an excellent presentation. I want to thank Commissioner Udaly for the leadership that she has shown in tackling this issue. This is one of those below-the-radar issues that has huge ramifications for our community, and we all have a collective interest in getting it right. So I want to thank you. Aye.
Hardesty.
I agree. I want to also thank Director Suk. I want to thank Commissioner Udaly. In 2000, when I worked with then-Commissioner Serena Cruz to ensure that there was a full count in Multnomah County.
There you go.
See? Yeah, right. It was a community effort, right? Because the community knew what was at stake. This year, there's even more at next year, in 2020, there's even more at stake because we know that we have a federal government that would rather not count most of us. So the reality is that it is vital that we hire people who are deeply connected in the communities that we're attempting to reach. There's nothing like community advocates who absolutely know the community that they're serving. And I look forward to doing all I can to support this effort. I appreciate the entire council supporting this investment of dollars. But I think we have to use our voices in ways that actually encourage people to fully participate in this effort. Fear notwithstanding, I think we as the elected leadership of this city have an obligation to make sure that we talk about this everywhere we go. So I vote aye.
Wheeler.
I agree with all of the sentiment expressed by my colleagues. This was a great panel presentation. Thank you for being so organized, so provocative, and so interesting. Excellent conversation, yes. Colleagues, for a very important cause. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Thank you.